Got her? Environment, Economic Development, and Agriculture Division for Wednesday, May 1st, 2013 will come to order. Senator Saxog, do you want to present on this, or do you just want Mr. Becker to go through it?
That's right.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today I'm presenting the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council recommendations for the coming biennium.
And members, just so everybody's clear, we're just kind of listening to this. And then it's going to end up, we're just kind of listening to, oh, yeah, I get it. Sorry. And it's going to end up in the Cohen Subcommittee for Legacy. Is that where it's ending up? But any questions you have or comments you have about the bill here today, this is probably a pretty good time to make them if you want to. So, okay, Senator Saxog, go ahead. Sorry for interrupting.
Oh, no, that's okay. So anyway, we're reviewing these recommendations. I serve on Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council along with my colleague Senator Ingebrigtsen. And this council has recommended 29 proposals for funding, totaling $91.2 million. 23 of these 29 are continuations of previous recommendations. And as you know, we've been doing this for 5 years, so this is the fifth set of recommendations made by the council. The previous four were accepted by the legislature. With virtually no changes, and I think probably Senator Ingebrigtsen, although I'm not going to speak for him, would believe that we did a pretty good job, and that's probably the reason why it happened. With me today is Bill Becker, the Executive Director of the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, and Heather Coop, and they're going to help explain any the proposals or changes. Thank you.
Who wants to go first?
Mr. Chair, I will. I am Bill Becker, the Executive Director of the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. And let me begin by directing you to an item in your packet, which is the four-color photo rotogravure from the Minnesota Conservation Volunteer. I wanted to start out with this because this is what this legacy account is all about, what this legacy fund is all about. It's those special places in Minnesota that we're keeping and saving for the future. It's the hard-to-find spots. It's the places that in 25 years people will come to the state and say, we did a good job spending that tax money. There's something to be said for the expenditure. That, as we go through the historical data and overview, you can look at that. There is in your folder a handout, 2 pages, with the title Outdoor Heritage Fund Appropriations Overview and Historical Data. Very quickly, as we all know, the Outdoor Heritage Fund was part of the Clean Water Land and Legacy Amendment ratified by the voters in 2008. Established 4 dedicated funds, Clean Water with 33% of the income, Outdoor Heritage with 33% of the income, Parks and Trails with 14.25%, and Arts and Culture with 19.75%. It's funded from 0.375% of the tax proceeds. Approximately $95 million is available annually for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And I might add that, according to statute, we make our recommendations on an annual basis. And the amendment requires the Outdoor Heritage Fund be used to protect, restore, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. When the amendment was passed, there was statute in place authorizing, upon passage of the amendment, the establishment of the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council and the fund itself. The council is understood, and the fund are organized under Minnesota Statutes 97A.056. It's made up of 12 members, 2 House members, 2 Senate members, and 8 citizen members. It's part of the legislative branch. The council makes funding recommendations, and this is from the statutes, that directly relate to the restoration, protection, and enhancement of wetlands, prairies, forest, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife, that prevent forest fragmentation, encourage forest consolidation, and expand native restored native prairie. I think the important thing to this is that it's specific and that the expenditures are to directly result in these outcomes. The statutes also require a small grants program, which is called the CPL program. That's an annual appropriation of approximately $3 to $4 million historically to the Department of Natural Resources for small groups and things of that sort. The process used by the council is an open and competitive process for developing recommendations. It's a level playing field, and it uses objective-based criteria for its evaluation. Lesard Sam's council members today are four appointed by the House of Representatives: Rick Hansen, Representative Denny McNamara, Ron Shara, and David Hartwell of Minneapolis. Four appointed by the Senate: Senator Tom Saxaw, Senator Bill Ingebretson, James Cox, and Bob Anderson, and four appointed by the governor: Scott Rawl, Susan Olson, Jane Kingston, Elizabeth Wilkins. The council has adopted some guiding principles that it uses in making its recommendations. Be transparent, understandable, and accessible by the public. Protect and advance the public interest. Support programs grounded in science and reflecting best practices for resource management. And take into account existing conservation delivery systems. Finally, we're to ensure conservation benefits are broadly distributed across the state. I'm proud to say that this is the fifth recommendation of the council, one-fifth of the way through the amendment. The total appropriations that have been recommended and to date are $422,549,000. There have been 128 programs or projects funded. If you turn to the third page of this handout, there's a table at the top that's titled Acres Affected by Activity to Date. The statutes require the council to account for its work in acres by constitutional objective. And you can see that as a total to date, we've affected 612,000 acres. The majority of that work has been in protection through easements, but I want to point out that 276,116 acres have been enhanced. Enhanced is removing invasive species, improving prairie, that sort of thing. In addition, shallow lake work is in there, and nesting cover is included in enhancement. The next table down shows you where this has occurred. In the Minnesota laws of 2009 didn't require us to have ecological sections that came in during that year. The statutes were changed. And you can see that we account for Minnesota laws of 2010 up through the current date. The majority of our work has been in the prairie, where 209,000 acres have been affected in one way or another. Prairie is high priority in Minnesota. It's disappearing. It's where our grassland resources are. We've seen fit to put as much work as we can in there. The second ecological section in terms of work is the forest prairie, followed by the northern forest. The forest prairie is that transition zone that goes from northwestern Minnesota down to southeastern Minnesota, roughly, where the glaciation receded, leaving sandy soils that are predominantly grow prairie types of plants and transitional trees and shrubs. Ecological section to date, the funding recommended in the third table on that page, the majority of the funds logically have gone to the prairie. The next most important place is Northern Forest, if you evaluate it based on the amount of money that has been invested. That's the history. I think it would be a good time to take questions if we can, if it's all right with you, Mr. Chair, and then we'll go to the bill itself. And
well, I don't know if anybody has any questions until you get to the bill. So anybody have any questions on the way it operates or comments from anybody? Why don't you let us know what's in the bill? I don't know if it has to be real detailed, but you probably should let us know what each of the expenditures are for. So that would probably be a good way to go.
Okay. We've got it before you, a summary of the recommendations bill that is titled FY14 Outdoor Heritage Fund Recommendation Summary. But very quickly we can go over and then the spreadsheet.
All right, go ahead.
So, as Senator Saxog said, there were 29 proposals recommended for funding. 79 of those proposals are continuations. Specific ones that are highlighted are habitat protection in Dakota County, Living Shallow Lakes, Wetlands Initiative, and the Moose Habitat. The majority of the conservation work is in the prairies, as I mentioned before. PILT obligations, payment in lieu, are created by 25% of the overall activity and 65% of fee acquisition. So there's some fee acquisition that doesn't create a PILT liability. 174 miles of shoreline will be affected, and 14% of the Outdoor Heritage Fund will be spent in the metropolitan urbanizing area across 9 programs. To go further into this very, very quickly, you can see the acres affected by acquisition, restoration, and enhancement in terms of whether they're wetlands, forest, and prairies. I think the takeaway there, again, is most of the investments in enhancement. The funds recommended by activity would tell you that most of the activity is in protection with easement. Areas by ecological section, thank you. Acres by ecological section, we're, again, mostly working in the prairie, and funds by ecological section is primarily spent in that's evenly distributed across the ecological sections in the protect, enhance, and restore. On the back of this handout, you can find the payment in lieu of taxes detail. Often people are curious about personnel in the bill. $6.6 million is for personnel at 7.3% of the total recommendations. 47 FTEs will be directly supported, with 27 in state positions and 19 in non-governmental organization positions. And you've got on the back our address if you want questions. We are your staff. We are joint services, nonpartisan staff, so anyone is welcome to come and get help from us. With that, Senator Saxog, would you like to have?
Mr. Berger, when you say 174 miles of shoreline will be affected, what does that mean exactly?
Easements to protect is primarily the way the shoreline is affected, especially in wild rice production areas and things of that sort. Ms. Coop, do you have additional information?
Say your name for the record, please.
Heather Coop, Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. That total would also include riparian areas being affected, trout streams, for example. Buffer strips would also be included in that total.
When you say affected, are you people not allowed to use it, or what do you mean by it?
I would be referring to an enhancement of those areas.
And that means?
It means that, for example, in a trout stream, work would be done to enhance, improve habitat for the livelihood habitat of trout.
Mr. Chair, it would be planting grasses, brush or plants to hold the shore together, to stop infiltration of soil and erosion, things of that sort. This is especially true with the wild rice resource, too. It protects it in that fashion.
Okay. Any questions? Or who wants to run through either the spreadsheet or Senator Scalzi?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just kind of curious about the $6.6 million for personnel. Could you break that out a little bit better for us so that we know what we're talking about?
I will do it in general. We're talking about field personnel to actually do enhancements and things of that sort. There is some supervisory personnel. There are some negotiators in the case of acquisition. So these are the people that are directly employed by the organizations, agencies that are doing the work. There is additional personnel in contract work as well that I don't think shows up in this.
Mr. Chair Senator Scalzi, I think the other thing to note is that when the proposals are made, those have to be delineated, too, so that we know exactly how many people are going to be working on it. And believe me, as Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm sure, would concur on, there's a lot of questions just on that, that we aren't wasting a lot of money. Mr. Chair, one comment I'd make, because Mr. Becker said at least twice that the majority of the money or the largest percentage of the money is in the prairies right now. I think the reason that the proposals that have been accepted deal with prairie grass are twofold. One is that they are the fastest disappearing part of our habitat in this state. But the second thing is the federal government, through some of their programs, have shown some really good leveraging of money, so that through the RIM program, for instance, and CRP, we've been able to come up with some easements that have made it a good buy, so to speak. What we're seeing, of course, is with what's happening in Washington right now, those programs are starting to disappear, and we aren't going to see as much of that. So the next time that we come to this table, we may be talking about a different percentage, or because projects indeed in other areas may be better leveraged.
Okay, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just might make a couple comments, being on the Lasard-Sams since the beginning. Senator Saxog hit on something that's very, very true and very clear. When you attend these meetings, you will notice a lot of scrutiny when it comes to the personnel that are going to be used for these projects, the charging off of equipment and the possibility of purchasing equipment. There just isn't anything that isn't questioned. And this whole group, a very diverse group from all over the state of Minnesota, as you can see, is very concerned about making sure all as many dollars actually hit the ground that can. And that's why you see only a 7.3% of it is actually labor or jobs. That doesn't sound like the right thing to be saying, but as compared to a business where 76% to 80% is labor. So most of the money does go to the projects on the ground, and it's a very, very interesting committee to be on, and of course they're scrutinized very heavily by the legislative auditor, and I think Jim Nobles has said it several times throughout the, I believe, two audits that have gone on that the staff does a remarkable job, and the council in making these recommendations. So they do wonderful work.
Senator Weaver.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to follow up on, as we look at some of the acquisitions, and recognizing that I think early in the process, we were probably lands that were acquired were perhaps much more marginal than some of the land that's being acquired today, and because I have seen instances where lands are being bought in support of those marginal areas in order to provide food plots, et cetera. So it's actually cultivated land that is taken out of production. And one of the feedbacks that I'm starting to get, particularly from county commissioners, is the fact of this much taxable land in some instances being taken out of production. And as we look at land that's being acquired, we're talking now about, with the increase in values, we're talking about land that is approaching you know, the $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 an acre mark that is actually being acquired in support of some of the more marginal lands. And so we're talking then about real estate taxes that are probably, depending on a number of things, but maybe $15, $20 or more per acre. And how is the PILT payment going to be? What's the relationship of that PILT payment to the actual real estate tax amounts that that land is generating, if I might ask that question?
Mr. Chair, Senator Weber, historically there's been a benefit to the counties, but I think that this is something that needs reassessment. PILT is paid at a rate usually on the lands that the council is involved in at 0.075% of the assessed value of the property. Obviously, in a rising market, depending on how fast it rises, there may be some lag there. That's made up if we ever have a declining market on the other end.
Right.
But it's a fair replacement for the taxes lost. I'll tell you what my personal concern is, and that is that this land and the crops grown on it represent a significant addition to the local economy. When you drive through rural Minnesota and you see the grain elevators, that's the rural economy. That's what people get, they're where they get their money. And so it's important not to affect that in a significant fashion. And I think you've got to be wise in what you buy. And the council has asked and presses their acquisition programs to concentrate their acquisition in 3x3, 4x4 mile areas. So there's some synergy in the acquisition. So when you buy that higher class land, it has a higher class wildlife benefit too. It's not isolated and that sort of thing. But PILT does, according to the auditor, a pretty good job of replacing the taxes. Acquisition may affect the economy of the local area in other ways, and it's important to make sure you buy the high priority, good wildlife land that has that synergistic effect.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Weber, I think it's important, though, to note that fee purchase is the smallest percentage of what we spend the money on. Easements, enhancement are what we invest in mostly.
Would someone like to just quickly run through the bill and tell us what's in it so the committee knows what's in it?
Yeah, I can do that. Let me grab a copy. Would you like to run through it?
No, because they'll pout.
Okay. Yeah, let me have the copy. I appreciate you letting us get our act together here. We're going to run through the spreadsheet, but we'll run through the bill instead.
Yeah, run through the bill, because then we can follow along.
There's a total on page subdivision 1 of the bill of $91,203,000 in the bill. This is to be supplemented by an additional $4.4 million. That's in a recommendation that will be amended in an author's amendment into the bill. It's a supplemental recommendation for one of the highest-ranked programs, RIM-WRP. Subdivision 2 is Prairies with 27...
And did that have something to do with the February forecast? Is that what the deal is, sir? Is that what I'm...
Mr. Chair, precisely.
Okay. All right.
We make our initial recommendations in November. It's hard to get the fund statement right and up to date at that point in time, and then the February forecast comes in. So there are two things that are affecting it, but the majority of it is the February forecast.
Okay.
Subdivision 2 is Prairies at $27,730,000. The first program there is Grasslands for the Future, which is at $2 million. And it's an innovative program using a new method of putting easements on land, where land is bought, the easement is put on the land, and then the land is resold with the easement on it. We hope that that will reduce the cost of placing easements on land. On 2B is accelerating the wildlife management area acquisition. It's phase five of that. It's $7,960,000. This is a bricks and mortar meat and potatoes program, buying land for the state wildlife management area program.
Maybe I'm misinterpreting, but bricks and mortar doesn't mean you're building something, does it?
No.
Okay.
But it means
meat and potatoes.
The meat and potatoes part was important. All right.
Mr. Chair, no. It does mean you can go out and touch it and feel it.
Okay.
And stand on it. 2C is DNR Wildlife Management Area, Scientific and Natural Area, Native Prairie Bank easements, phase four at $4.9 million. This is one of the PILT liability programs. It'll, if it's carried out the way it was planned, it'll create $27,825, an estimated payment per year in PILT. Two D is Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project, phase four. It's $5.3 million. This goes to the Commissioner of Natural Resources, but it's for an agreement with the Nature Conservancy that actually does the work. And it's typical in many of our programs to pass money through to non-governmental organizations that are a little faster at doing the work in some cases, and in other cases are organizations that people would prefer to work with as opposed to the state. 2E is Minnesota Buffers for Wildlife and Waters, phase three. It's $3.5 million. Its outcomes is the outcomes of this particular program are to target expiring CRP lands, increase participation of private landowners in habitat projects, protect, restore, and enhance waterfowl and upland bird habitat, restore and enhance shallow lakes, and keep water on the land. Item 2F, Cannon Rivers Headwaters Habitat Complex. It's the third appropriation to that project. It's a trust for public land through the DNR, and it's $1,780,000. 2G is accelerated prairie restoration and enhancement on DNR lands, phase five at $2,220,000. And this is one of the programs that's split between the prairie region, but it also has some work in the metropolitan urbanizing region, which is a little larger than the seven county metro area. Subdivision 3 is $3 million for forest. 3A is Young Forest Conservation. It's a new program at $1.18 million. It's with the American Bird Conservancy and is a restoration of 1,000 acres, 1,100 acres. It's primarily occurring in Becker and Mille Lacs counties. 3B is the Camp Ripley Partnership, phase three. This is part of the Minnesota National Guard Army Compatible Use Buffer, or ACUB, program. It is a combination of acquisition and easements. 3C is the Northeastern Minnesota Sharptail Grouse Habitat Program, phase four, at $1.18 million. It's primarily in Aiken County. To give you an idea of the level of funding in the past, it's been funded at FY11 at $1.5 million, $1 million in FY12, and $1,300,000 in FY13. It's an example of a program where the council is trying to build capacity by feeding resources into it on an annual basis, allowing them to build their ability to do conservation. 3D is Protect Key Forest Lands in Cass County, phase four, at $500,000. They are in the northern forest region in Cass County. This is buying land that, as if it were to go stay in private hands, would fragment access to forest parcels, so it's improving the ability to get to forest and manage the habitat on the land. 3E is the Critical Shoreline Habitat Protection Program. It's $820,000. It's primarily in Carlton, Cook, Kuchiching Lake, St. Louis counties. I want to just point one thing out to you so that as the Finance Committee you understand this thoroughly. You'll notice in the appropriation paragraph that up to $160,000 is for establishing a monitoring and enforcement fund as approved in the accomplishment plan and subject to Minnesota Statutes 97A.056 Subdivision 17. This is money to perpetually steward and enforce the perpetual easement so that the initial investment lasts forever is the idea. 3F, Minnesota Moose Habitat Collaborative Phase 2. This is large landscape scale habitat development. It's coordinated with the moose research being done in the state of Minnesota by the university and by the Department of Natural Resources. So we have a large scale experiment going on. They can track and see habitat improvement, how the moose respond to it. Subdivision 4, wetlands, $31,150,000. The REM WRP partnership phase 5 is, if you add in the $4.4 million, will be at $17,790,000. It's matched $1.6 federal to $1 state. It's a bargain. The idea is to restore shallow wetlands and land surrounding it in complexes. Very quickly, running to 4B, accelerating the wildlife, the waterfowl production area acquisition, phase 5. This is $6,830,000. It's located in Big Stone, Blue Earth, Clay, Jackson, Candy, Ojai, Lacaparo, Lyon, Manoman, Murray, Rice, Stearns, and Wright counties. So it's got a broad area it's working in, and these lands are going to be managed as waterfowl production areas in the U.S. Fish by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So there's no management costs downstream for the state on these properties. They produce habitat, however. 4C, Living Shallow Lakes and Wetlands Initiative, is $3.5 million. Next one is 4D, Wild Rice Shoreland Protection Program, Phase 2, is $1,630,000. It's primarily in the northern forest region. 4E, Wetland Habitat Program, is $1,980,000. And it's in the Forest Prairie Transition Region and in the Prairie Region primarily. 4F is Accelerated Shallow Lakes and Wetlands Enhancement, Phase 5, at $1,790,000. 4G is Pelican Lake Enhancement at $2 million in Wright County. It's one of the more significant waterfowl lakes in the state of Minnesota. Subdivision 5 is General Habitats at $23,987,000, 5A being DNR Aquatic Habitat, Phase 5 at $5,250,000. It stretches across the forested region and down into the southeastern region as well. 5B is the habitat protection in Dakota County, Phase 4. Dakota County is one of the counties that has instituted programs to use the fund and access the fund.
Any of these aquatic management areas, is any of this money used for trying to detect aquatic invasive species? Is that part of it?
Mr. Chair, that's not the idea behind them. It's generally littoral protection of littoral or shallow lake edge where spawning takes place and fisheries reproduction takes place. 5C, Root River Protection and Restoration, is $2,750,000. 5D, Metro Big Rivers Phase 4, is $1,720,000. It's a group of non-governmental organizations that have gotten together to protect the major rivers flowing through the metropolitan area and do projects in along those rivers. And some of those projects, in fact, are in parks and open space properties.
So whenever we see this enforcement fund on Minnesota statutes 97-05-6, that's the permanent easement protection? Is that what that is?
Mr. Chair, yes, sir.
On each one of them?
Yes, sir. 5E is the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum, is $1 million. It's part of a combined purchase with money from the Environmental Trust Fund of 18 acres adjoining the Landscape Arboretum to be managed as habitat. 5F is the Lower Mississippi River Habitat Partnership Phase 3. This is redevelopment of habitat in Mississippi by the southeast Minnesota-Wisconsin border, rebuilding of islands and things of that sort. 5G is Minnesota Trout Unlimited Cold Water Fish Habitat Enhancement and Restoration Phase 5. Is $2.47 million for reconstruction, restoration of streams and stream banks and in-stream habitat. Albert Lee Lake Management.
Is that just southeastern Minnesota, or is that all over the state?
All over the state. In fact, there's one stream in this particular appropriation that's in Duluth, interestingly enough.
Probably so. Where I got my smoked fish from the other day.
Mr. Chair, probably. 5H, Albert Lee Lake Management and Invasive Species Control Structure, Phase 3. This is $1.127 million for invasive species control and lake restoration. They had two proposals. There was another one for approximately $500,000. We asked them to take that to the Department of Natural Resources Conservation Partners Program. They won the competition there, got their funding, and by doing that got it faster and are using it today. So they've done quite well down there. This is the Shell Rock River Watershed District, who's taken a comprehensive watershed-based approach to using the fund and has had a great deal of success.
And what are these structural deterrents?
A structural deterrent in this particular case is a it is a slanted dam that they can control the water level behind, and it is the water is basically redirected during this part of the season when the carp migrate. So the carp don't move constantly. They move during spawning and when there's certain currents and temperatures. And they control the amount of water going over the deterrent during that period in time.
So there's no electrical or bubbles or disco shows or anything like that. There's just the wall.
Mr. Chair, this is plain old difficulty of swimming upstream.
Okay, all right.
5I, Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program. This is what we've been talking about. It's $3,860,000. And there are two parts to this program right now, although there may be more in the future. There's a main program that requires quite a bit of planning to apply to. And then they have an expedited project program, which are pre-planned projects, prairie burns and things of that sort. And you show up and say, I've got one, and they write you a check, and you do it. It's not quite that easy, but that's the idea. Section 6 is administration. There's $1,206,000 for administration. 6A sends $175,000 of that to the Commissioner of Natural Resource to manage the contract or pass-through work to non-governmental organizations. 6B is to the Legislative Coordinating Commission, $936,000. It's a biennium's worth of administration for the council. That's the staff you're looking at today, travel for the council, and things of that sort for 2 years. 6C is a technical evaluation panel at $45,000. 6D is high priority pre-transaction services acceleration for the council. This is something that came about as a result of a difficulty in arriving at a price for the Mississippi River Northwoods project that was purchased with the last appropriation. And the idea here is to have available authorized money to do the appraisals of these large, costly projects up front so that we know when we're at this point in the process whether it's going to be $14 million to buy the land, $12 million to buy the land, $10 million to buy the land. In the case of Northwoods, it was thought to be $14 million when they came to us. Through the wisdom of the legislature, it was set up so that we could pay less based on three appraisals, I think, or at least two, and we ended up paying $11 million instead of the $14 million. The remainder of the bill is standard boilerplate language describing the availability and the payment conditions. This money is available in a different fashion than most of the appropriations you'll see. Land for our money for acquisition of land is available for 3 years. Money for restoration and enhancement is available for 5 years. This gives the people who are doing the work the time to do a complete restoration and enhancement or to deal with difficult land acquisitions. Subdivision 9 is the mapping requirement, which simply says if we spend state money to get a product that ought to be open and available and knowledgeable to state, to the people of the state, we ought to put it on the maps that describe where the recreation and hunting and fishing is. So that, Mr. Chair, is the bill.
Any questions or comments from the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a note, bottom of the spreadsheet, as most of these funds, there's 5% left on the bottom for, and maybe Mr. Becker can comment with regards to that, but that's been pretty much generally every year we leave 5% on bottom of all heritage funds for whatever reason, just a good standard rule. I think it's also the advice of the legislative audit, so it is recognized on the spreadsheet here.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebretson, that's correct.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker, just one question. I understand, you know, the administration costs and the contract management, et cetera, and I have no problem with that. The one thing that I would like to ask about is as additional land is acquired and given to over to the DNR for management and what have you, we thereby increase their annual costs every year as well. And is there any payment made out of these funds to offset some of that, or is that additional cost simply absorbed in the annual budget?
Mr. Chair, Senator Weber, one of the things we ask each applicant is how their acquisitions will be sustained in the future. And I'll tell you that the plans are in part to use the Fish and Game Fund for DNR, for example. But nearly every applicant has pledged to come back to the Outdoor Heritage Fund for restoration and enhancement funds, which are essentially management funds, to do the future management in the field. So we're paying some downstream management, but they need to come back and ask for it.
Mr. Becker, do we need some kind of a study to find out how much land is actually left in Minnesota that can be acquired or taken off the tax rolls before we do it all, and then there's none left? Or do we? I mean, is this unlimited? How much of this can we continue to do?
Mr. Chair, I think that that's a wise question. The conversations I've had with the Department of Natural Resources and other major land managers in the state are that we need to have a roadmap on what we need to acquire. And there ought to be some investment in terms of studies put into that. There's not a settled approach, whether you do it by county or region or things like that, but an acquisition plan is appropriate. And we've had them in the past. Some of you may recall Resource 2000 that was prepared in about 1985 or so, that laid out how much land ought to be bought for what purposes. I didn't bring it today, and I wish I had. We've got a graph of the land additions to the wildlife land managed by the Department of Natural Resources, and it's an interesting graph. It does show the effect of the Outdoor Heritage Fund, but the years when we really bought land and bought it hand over fist was 1991, 92, 93, when, if my memory serves me right, and I'm trying to picture this graph in my mind, we were adding 13,000, 16,000 acres to wildlife management areas, SNAs, state forests, and things like that, exclusive of state parks. This is wildlife land. So as Senator Weber said earlier, the price of land is going up, and I was thinking, as he said, $6,000, $7,000 an acre. Boy, I hope you can find it for that. It's more expensive. We're not buying as much land as, in terms of acres, as we did at first, and we're not buying as much and adding it as we did in the 90s, early 90s. But your question is, do we need a plan? My answer is it would be nice to have one.
Entering the direction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a question every year that's brought up. And actually, I get this brought when the township people come to the Capitol and they ask, how much more land are you going to take off the production rolls, and how much more land are you going to be purchasing here at the state of Minnesota and not paying for taxes? Well, I'm very upfront with them, number one. Pay in lieu of taxes is addressing that issue. It has addressed that issue since day one. And I'm not a huge proponent of buying more land, but I also qualify that by saying we've got an opportunity to sell land and we're not doing it. We had a $6.2 million bill here some years ago, the chair may remember, that we couldn't even satisfy. In other words, we were going to sell $6.2 million worth of this type of land, and we couldn't find any buyers at that time. Well, now that might have changed. That may have changed in the most recent years. But this always rears its head, and Bill Becker's correct in saying this particular bill we're buying less now than we have in the past. One should also know that we just got done doing a PILT study, which a large group got together, because of the questions of why the difference in PILT throughout the state. Why do we pay different rates? And I learned something interesting, and I thought it was quite odd that counties would pay a lieu of taxes from the state of Minnesota, and they had the obligation of paying that township share to the townships, and in some cases they don't. They have the right to keep it all. So when townships come down, you're very angry. They may want to just follow the money trail back to the counties, and it might be sitting there, and they might be spending it. So it isn't as clear as everybody thinks it is. I know there is a 25-year projection, at least there was with PILT, as to what this obligation of this particular one-third of the constitutional amendment would cost. Because I think right now, Senator Sacksaw, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a PILT obligation for Minnesota is about $23 to $24 million a year is what we're paying. Over the 25-year period, it was projected that this particular council would project purchasing land that would cost the state of Minnesota between $4 and $5 million additional to that. So, when you look at the whole overall picture over a 25-year period, about $3 million worth of PILT. In the big picture, that's not a lot of acquisition. But we always should be open to selling land. We just should be. I mean, there's going to be some land that isn't sold. It should also be known that the universities of Minnesota don't pay taxes, nor does MnDOT pay taxes on their land. But the statute has been set up years and years ago where this type of land does actually pay their share and always has and will always continue to do that. So you just need to know there's many different sides of the story.
Mr. Chair, the thing that's in the last 10 years that's somewhat revolutionized conservation, but without necessarily fee purchase of land, are number one exchanges. We've done some of the biggest exchanges in the history of the state of Minnesota just in the last 5 years. And the second thing is easements. I mean, we have an easement on Blandin UPM's lands in northern Minnesota, some of the most beautiful forest land in the United States, if not in Minnesota, and it's under a conservation easement. They continue to pay taxes, and the public has access to it. So just those two mechanisms can keep us from ourselves in terms of having to purchase a lot more land and take that off the tax rolls.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm kind of wondering, because I do hear the comment sometimes that we're taking land out of production, so I'm kind of curious what kind of a percentage of what we buy would be considered, say, somebody's cornfield that's growing a lot of corn? What kind of a percentage of what we're buying or putting or buying easements on would be good production land that is producing food or ethanol?
Mr. Products? Chair, Senator Scalzi, I'm going to go out on a limb and take an educated guess. I don't know the precise number, and I would prefer to know the precise number, but a lot of what we're buying is land that is inundated with lake management and things like that. It's wetland, best way to put it. So I would be surprised if in excess of 50% of what we bought was good, fine farmland, cropland. I could be proven wrong and be embarrassed, but that would be my best educated guess.
Here's a question I have.
Know what the answer to that
I'm
side.
Sorry.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to mention that because I have appraised some of this ground in the past, I think that maybe the fair answer is that percentage is going to vary perhaps from area to area around the state. I would say that in my region, it's probably somewhat higher than that in many instances. But as you get into Senator Saxhog's region, it would probably be less than that. Statewide, I have no idea of knowing if you're right or wrong, but I think it's going to vary from region to region.
Mr. Chair? Decker. Variance is a part of life, and I'm sure that it will. The reason I answered the question the way I answered it was because of the amount of money going into RIM WRP for easements to protect land that really was wet to begin with and has been drained, and they're going to return it to wetland. And it's going back into wetland in part because the owners are dedicated to conservation, but also in part because it's a little harder to farm, not quite prime, and I feel intimidated with an appraiser here.
But Mr. Chair.
Well, and then he gave a political answer. It varies around the state. You know, I mean, what the heck?
Mr. Chair, I mean, let's face it. If we're talking about southwestern and western Minnesota, we're talking about these areas have less than 30% of their pre-settlement wetlands. And that's why we're doing that. In northern Minnesota, we're probably with the way the beavers are working on the wetlands right now, we're probably gaining wetlands, and we're in excess of 90% of our pre-settlement wetlands.
We still need to change the date on the trapping season, though. Senator Ingebretson.
Yeah. Hi, Mr. Chair, and I don't want to belabor this, and I always bring this up to Senator Weber's point in a respectfully, when I'm talking to the townships, I will say, I will always try and put myself on the other side as a seller. And I've got to had this farm in my life for my whole life, and nobody's coming home to farm it, so I want to sell it to the neighbors. And guess what? The neighbors are holding out, and they don't want to sell it. And pretty soon here comes Pheasants Forever or Ducks Unlimited, and they say, you know, this runs right along the corridor of an area that we're kind of interested in. Well, how much do you want for it? Yeah, well, here's what I want for it. Well, we'll go ahead and take it. Then, all of a sudden, the farmer's the bad person in the neighborhood because he sells it to somebody other than somebody who wants to put it in production. One should be very careful with that, because if it was my land, and it's my career that I worked for, it's my land, you know, the farmer works for his retirement. And I know county boards have touched this a little bit throughout the state in the last 7 years that I've been involved. Are they going to get in the business of telling those farmers that they can sell and what they can't sell? I don't think so. We got to be cautious with that too, it seems.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? If not, then thank you all very much. And this will end up in Senator Cohen's subcommittee that deals with legacy monies. And I guess at that time we'll have the amendment on. So, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Okay. How are we doing this trails thing here?
Starting with
Hartland Nelson. Is that who's the representative with the environmental initiative? You can all come up if there's enough. I bring a couple of chairs if there's not enough chairs.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Members, Cortland Nelson, DNR Parks and Trails Director. We've got a short presentation for you. I believe you have the handout that was distributed earlier with regards to our legislative assignment that was given last year to look at the distribution of the legacy dollars among the parks and trail providers in the state. And I think this will serve as a short, quick entree into the questions that are before you today with the legacy fund.
We're handing out the handout now, but go ahead. And do you want to start first, Mr. Nelson, or who wants to go first?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Emily Franklin. I'm with Environmental Initiative, the organization that facilitated the process on behalf of the Department of Natural Resources. So I'm going to just kind of shortly walk through a little bit about our organization, how the process worked, and then I'll turn it over to Cortland and some of the other participants to talk specifically about the recommendation that we reached consensus on a few months ago. So, again, just a little bit about Environmental Initiative. We are an environmental nonprofit organization based in the Twin Cities with the mission to solve environmental problems by working collaboratively. And one of the ways that we do this work is facilitate environmental policy conversations between government, nonprofit, environmental advocates, and businesses. So about a year ago, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources contracted with us to facilitate a conversation that was legislatively mandated, directed the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources to convene a 9-member working group to develop a consensus recommendation for the allocation of the Parks and Trails Fund. So we were contracted by the DNR to do this work. We began the process in April 2012, so just about a year ago at this time. We had six meetings between April and October, and we were able to get the nine members to reach an agreement about the legacy funds. So there was a nine-member working group with three representatives from each parks and trails system. So we had three individuals representing the Metropolitan Regional Parks and Trails, three representing the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and three representing the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition and Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails. In addition to that nine-member working group, we also had three individuals that served in an advisory role to our organization as we facilitated the process. So Cortland Nelson, who's next to me, Arnie Steffrud, and Chuck Woken from Stearns County Parks and Trails. Those three individuals didn't participate in the decision-making, but were really there as Parks and Trails experts to be a strategic sounding board for our organization as we facilitated the conversation. So that's just a little bit of background about the work group members. And ultimately, we were charged with, again, coming up with a consensus recommendation for how to divide the Parks and Trails legacy funds. So over the course of those six meetings, we spent a lot of time talking about what the best way was to do that. We agreed to a definition of consensus, which is a definition that our organization uses a lot when we're facilitating these types of processes. So the decisions that the work group members made, it was defined as reaching an agreement that all the parties could live with. And the reason that I say that is it's not necessarily the agreement was not necessarily something that everybody was overjoyed about, but we were ultimately able to reach an agreement that all of the parties could live with and felt was a fair path forward for these funds. When we started the conversation about a year ago, in the initial meetings, we spent a lot of time talking about how to ground the decision-making and came up with a list of guiding principles to sort of ground the conversation and to come back to as we proceeded. So the Parks and Trails Legacy Plan, which was a document that was developed before our process began, it was important for the work group members to keep that plan, that 25-year plan, in mind as they were making decisions about how to divide the funds. It was also important to acknowledge both present and future needs for Minnesota's parks and trails. Ensure the recommendation is easy to understand and explain. So we'll see how we do today explaining it to you. And finally, it was also very important for the work group members to base the recommendation on information that we know by using consistent, independent, and objective data. So before I turn it over to some of the individuals that were involved in the process, I just want to walk through a few of the challenges that we faced as we facilitated this conversation. The work group members agreed very early on that, again, they wanted to develop a formula that was based on independent data in order to divide the funds. And what I mean by independent data are different pieces of criteria like visitors, population, sales tax. We talked through a lot of different metrics to plug into a formula and come up with a way to divide the funds. We explored many, many models. You'll see in one of the photographs on the slides that we put together a handful of different examples and had work group members sort of weigh the pros and cons of each and combined all the different pieces of data in lots of different ways to try to come up with a way to divide the funding that was going to be fair and benefit all Minnesotans. And we ran into some challenges as we looked at those pieces of data. As many of you know, the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition is an organization that's in its early development, and some of the robust sets of data that our friends in the Metropolitan Regional Parks and Trails collect is not yet being done in Greater Minnesota. There's also some discrepancies with how data is collected between the Department of Natural Resources and the Metro Regional Parks and Trails System. So as we started to combine these data sets, we didn't always necessarily have apples to apples comparisons. And so in lieu of that, we developed an interim strategy to divide the funding. And with that, I'll turn it over to Cortland.
I think you need to
go through the next couple, and then we'll switch it.
Okay.
We'll go through the formula.
Okay. Apologize, we're just getting a little bit organized. One of the slides that you'll see is an outline of the recommendation, so I'm just going to kind of walk through each piece of the recommendation to kind of talk through the decision-making. So the first piece of it, again, this was something that the work group members agreed very early on that was important, was to establish a fund, so an off-the-top fund for the Greater Minnesota system, the Metro system, and the DNR system to continue to coordinate. And attached to that, there's some additional resources for Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails, which I'll talk about in a minute. The bulk of the recommendation, again, we'll walk through in a moment for how the funds will be divided. And then the last two pieces of the recommendation deal with increasing some flexibility for the legacy funding with Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails, as well as some suggestions to consider as future funding recommendations are made. So the first piece of it, again, was the establish a fund to coordinate among partners. So a half of a percent was recommended to take off the top to support coordination between the three systems and to make sure that we're able to sort of jointly promote and market all of our parks and trails. Some of the ideas came out of the Parks and Trails Legacy Plan in terms of developing a statewide Parks and Trails website, so there's one place to go for information about all Minnesota parks and trails. It was also recommended that the Parks and Trails Legacy Advisory Committee play a role in coordinating these pieces. In addition to that off-the-top fund, half of that was recommended to go to the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition to support system analysis and planning for a period of time. And this gets at the issue that there's some data collection that needs to happen in the Greater Minnesota system. So the group felt that it was appropriate to allocate a small amount of funding to help support those efforts, approximately $100,000 per fiscal year. Okay, I'm going to keep going. The third piece of the recommendation really is the bulk of the funding, and I'm sure many of you have heard the 40-40-20 split talked about. I'm going to just walk through this chart that you see in front of you to kind of explain the rationale for this and where this came from. The thing that I'll say about it before I dive in is that this is meant to be looked at from a very high level, and it's not necessarily perfect. It's really just a framework to think about a way to divide the funding while we're doing some data gathering. So if you start at the very top, we have 100% of the Parks and Trails legacy allocation, you know, minus the small percentage off the top. And the rationale for this is that parks and trails in Minnesota really serve two important functions. They provide sort of that near home recreation opportunity. So there's those parks and trails that are within that 30-minute drive from home. And then we also have very special places that are really destination opportunities where you will drive a farther distance to visit. And the work group members felt that for the most part, Minnesotans are utilizing those near-home recreation opportunities. So they made the decision to allocate 80% of the funding to that near-home function and 20% to that destination function. So if you look at the near-home function first, the work group members felt it was appropriate to split that evenly between the seven-county metro area and Greater Minnesota. This was done because, for all intents and purposes, that near-home recreation function in the metro area, they get that full 40% because, for the most part, Minnesotans in the metro area are recreating in our regional parks and trails. It's not to say that our DNR state parks in the metro area aren't important and special places. They absolutely are. But they felt it was appropriate to allocate that full 40% to the metro. So that's how the metropolitan regional system gets 40% of the allocation. Now, in Greater Minnesota, you have two providers of that near-home parks and trails recreation opportunities. You have the DNR state parks, and you also have Greater Minnesota regional parks. So the Greater Minnesota allocation is split 20% to Greater Minnesota, 20% to the Department of Natural Resources. And then finally, because our state parks are such special places and really are those destination opportunities, the Department of Natural Resources received the full 20% of that destination allocation. And with that, turn over to Cortland.
Mr. Chairman, members, I would like to introduce Al Leifert from Douglas County to describe a couple of the slides specifically relating to Greater Minnesota issues.
Thank you, Cortland, and committee members, chairman and committee members. My name is Al Leifert. I'm this year's chair of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition. Some of you will remember last year Marsha Larson from the city of Bemidji represented our organization here.
Mr. Leifert, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I might add, one of the best county parks directors, I should say, in Minnesota is going to be speaking now, and I think Senator Westrum would agree.
If I'd have known he was going to say that, I wouldn't let him.
Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
We actually were department heads together, so I've known him quite a while.
Go ahead.
I was saying Marsha Larson from the city of Bemidji represented our organization last year. I work for Douglas County. Alexandria is the county seat, and of course, Senator Ingebrigtsen represents our community, and as does Senator Westrum. Welcome. And thank you for the chance to speak today. I'm going to back up just a little bit into Emily's presentation and cover the next two slides. In the past, before Legacy and during the first years of Legacy, Greater Minnesota Regional Parks were developed through grant programs that the Department of Natural Resources administered, and the way that we could use funds was very strictly coordinated and controlled around the development and acquisition of properties. So in this committee's view, it was important that we expand the way that legacy funds can be used by parks outside the metropolitan area to include such things as master planning, to include such things as programming where connecting people to the outdoors, one of the pillars of the legacy plan, would become part of the function that regional parks in non-metropolitan Minnesota would use these funds. And even marketing, and particularly there is a directive in the legislation about providing website access to all properties in Minnesota that are developed with legacy funds. So that's where part of that 0.25% we imagine will be used within the non-metropolitan regional park system. Further than that, then the next slide talks about the criterion and the process to consider future allocations to across all regional and state parks in Minnesota. And some of you will recall that the 2011 legislature directed a study, the 175 study it became known as, to help solve some of the questions about what exactly is the regional park system in non-metropolitan Minnesota. That process has resulted in what we believe is a very excellent strategic plan to move forward to carry out the legacy, the 25-year legacy plan, and to augment the state park system within Minnesota. And the criterion that are outlined in the 175 strategic plan address these issues, such as population, population growth, park acres, operating expenditures, visitation, those sorts of things. Something that many of us feel is probably missing from this is that while it points to data and data sets to make decisions about funding, it really never does get at the actual preservation of the pretty places of Minnesota. It's a difficult thing to quantify with data sets, and going forward, it needs to be talked about. At any rate, we feel that the strategic plan, which we will recommend be adopted as the document that moves forward the park and trail system outside the metropolitan area, that we can begin to address those things and how legacy funds will be spent within non-metropolitan Minnesota through the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Arnie Stefford. I'm the manager for the Regional Parks and Natural Resources Unit at the Metro Council. And Parks and Trails legacy funds flow through my office to 10 regional park implementing agencies that offer outdoor recreation opportunities here in the metro area. The other aspect of the advisory committee's, or the recommendation, I should say, of this Parks and Trails funding committee was that there should be next steps from what's called the Parks and Trail Legacy Advisory Committee, and that's a 17-member group comprised of citizens and professionals in the outdoor recreation profession that are from all over the state. They were appointed in collaboration with the Department of Natural Resources, the Metro Council, and the State of Minnesota Parks and Trails Coalition. And what's proposed here in the slide that you have before you is to oversee a process to define and collect data for the allocation of dollars from the legacy fund, establish priorities for how we would spend the coordinate among partners financing regarding marketing of the system and other things related to that, and then to help support the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition in building the capacity to collect the data that they need to do for an apples-to-apples comparison and to define fully these are the regional parks and trails in Greater Minnesota so that we have that defined system along with what's in the metropolitan region and the DNR's state parks and trails. So I'll turn it back to Cortland.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members, and in summary of the short presentation, there were four bullets, and you see them on that last slide there. But I do want to take a second to go over those because we think they're important after all of this work that's gone into it. First, the consensus comment that Emily made that this was the best effort by serious people to come forward with a proposal that would work for the best interest of all involved. Second, it provides resources for the ongoing collaboration, this work, this body of work that needs to be done amongst the three organization and all our affiliated members, as well as the enhancement and the growth to that third bullet of Greater Minnesota so that they can continue to build their capacity. And then finally, it's been mentioned several times, but it probably is worth mentioning here with this body that we are talking about a system that is very highly regarded and that we are looking for the best at the end of the day for all of our citizens, the protection of those resources and getting more folks out of doors. And we feel that this proposal and the budget that accompanies it in the governor's recommendation is an achievement, and would certainly be pleased to answer any questions you might have about either the process or the items in the budget.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. Thank you for your work. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Nelson, can you tell us how many state parks under DNR jurisdiction are in the seven-county metro area?
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, we have Fort Snelling State Park, we have Afton State Park, we have O'Brien State Park, we have the Loose Line Trail and the Gateway Trail.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that report. It certainly brought me up to speed on the studies that went on over the year and some new terms here, near home recreate. I'm not sure who can answer this, but when you did your near-home recreate numbers, I'm wondering if the study group included our hunting and fishing seasons in that near-home recreate number. I just happened to think of that. It's not a gotcha question. I'm just wondering if that was considered at all. Obviously, rural recreation parks would see bigger numbers because of that, because most of your hunting and fishing does occur in rural Minnesota, both to the south and mostly north, northeast, northwest. But I'm wondering if that was considered at all or if it's just park recreation, because I think some people, well, I know I stayed in the Big Bog State Park when I go fishing up in Red Lake. So.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I think the answer would be no, other than the very example that you gave. If an individual was part of a fishing trip at ABC State Park or XYZ Regional Park, then that would be counted in that way. But in terms of the overall bannering of fishing and hunting activities, because the bulk of this effort was really focused on facilities and the actual management responsibilities that State Parks and Greater Minnesota has in their subsets of administration, and not outside particularly of those boundaries. Al, would you want to clarify that in any way?
Thank you, Cortland. No, I would agree with that, that we, recognizing that most hunting and fishing activities take place in areas outside of the metropolitan area, and certainly that is a form of recreation that lots of people participate in, not everyone, but this particularly was a parks and trails bill, and frequently parks are not hunting areas.
Just to follow up with that, and I understand that, folks, but when we're talking about numbers, and I know I've been in the middle of the fray here, and let's just say sometimes it's not as calm as it may seem, but I know that the metropolitan regional parks say they create the certainly the fund is created by the majority of the folks in the seven county metro area with the sales tax. Nobody's going to argue with that. Therefore, we should get more of the piece of the pie. But when I hear about the good work that you're doing, it's awful hard to figure that. It's awful hard to figure in that equation into the rural parks use, potential use, not hunting. I'm not talking about parks that are being hunted, and I'm talking about the stay of the people that are up there recreating. Hunting is a huge part of Minnesota's heritage and recreation. So I guess I would certainly, when you're considering the 20-40-40 split, that the 20% is still on the lower side, lower end of this. And whether we can argue, we certainly don't want to argue and carry on about that, because that's part of, I think, why you had the study, was to try and come up with a number that we could stay with and go with. My other question, my last question would be, these numbers, they were put in statute exclusively last year or 2 years ago. Is that going to continue? In other words, can the metro parks come into the rural if the rural doesn't spend their money, or does that drop to the bottom line? Can somebody address the exclusive part of the funding?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the each biennium appropriation, this would be the third. It is specific to Met Council and then DNR, and then within DNR the money has split, where our system receives X number of dollars each biennium, and then we have managed the grant program that goes to Greater Minnesota. And so we there is no mechanism, if I understand your question, Senator, for an overage or an underage or a need to be displayed in one area that then would shift money to another. And it is strictly the language of that law from the budget that will direct where those dollars go. There is not a, if I could add, Mr. Chairman, there is not a formula in statute that drives beyond that particular budget year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I can count. I can count the amount of people around the table.
We're not going to vote here anyway.
Well, I know that. But, when you have a third of the work group coming from the metro, and then you end up, we used to have 43% of the parks and trails funds. Now we're down to 40. And I don't know that we're getting fewer people in the metro area. I don't think we are. We're still providing 64% of the funding and 54% of the population. So I just think it's unfair, but what can I do?
I don't know. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Well, I opened up this one, didn't I? I apologize, Mr. Chair.
Because we were just about done.
Yeah. Well, I don't think, Mr. Chair, I don't think it's going to go away. I think it's going to go from here to Senator Cohen's committee, I guess, but...
Then that's where we'll be acting on.
And
this is a forum. Senator Cohen wanted this to be the forum for presenting what's here, and then do a hearing on it, and then act on it in his committee. So,
I just wanted to make sure of the exclusive part, because that was fought very hard for, and quite frankly, the reason that is because the metro folks did come into the rural portion of the constitutional funding because they could by statute of the 14% they came in and took that first go around 11%, and I just don't want to see that happen anymore. So whether that happens at the end of the day or not, I just want to make that point very strongly here, and look forward to the visiting going forward.
Are there any other questions of these four people? Senator Osmek.
I can't believe I'm saying this. I really wish Senator Dibble was here. I guess I shouldn't go by without saying.
Are you Metro?
I'm a Metro. Well, okay. I'm a hybrid.
Oh, okay. All right.
He claims to be rural when he wants to be rural.
I'm on the border. But I do agree with the fact.
So you can go either way. Oh, sorry. Okay,
go ahead. We haven't gotten to that legislation yet, Mr. Chair. I guess I agree with Senator Scalzi is that, you know, the metropolitan area provides a lot in this fund, and I'm not even saying it should be 50%. I shouldn't even throw a number out, but I think it's the metropolitan area is being sold short with 40%, that it should be maybe closer to 42 or 43. And again, we're outnumbered, and Senator Dietzig's not here, so we're even more outnumbered. But I think there should be some thought put into where the money comes from. And I appreciate what Senator Engelbretson has to say on the subject, and I think we're probably on opposite sides on this one. But I think there has to be some level of rational accommodation for the Metropolitan Parks, which has a very, very, very large population, as well as the cities contribute a significant amount to their park operations on their own tax base. Outside of just the money that comes out. So,
no, but think about this. This is kind of neat because it actually generates bipartisan disapproval. And so we actually have Democrats and Republicans agreeing with each other and disagreeing with each other in the same topic. So it's actually kind of a uniting thing about the legislature, if you think about it.
Mr. Chair, can I unite one more time here?
Yes, one more time. And then we get a couple of people that want to say something. Does anybody on the committee have any questions of these four so that they can step down if they want to? And then we have Bo Carlson and former Senator Roebling would like to come up to the table and say something. So if you guys want to come up, go ahead. And then go ahead, Senator Engelbretson.
Just like to make a comment, Senator Dietzig, I appreciate your comments. But counties have been putting in money into county parks as well as cities over the years. So just to say that. But well, I've really saved my questions for the up-and-coming witnesses.
Oh, there she is.
Here she comes.
Thank God we got another Metro.
Thank God we got that vote over with in time. 80% to rural, and the rest is split up by Metro and DNR.
Yeah, go get Scott. I pined for him just a minute ago.
Welcome, Senator Roebling. How are you?
Oh, good afternoon, everyone. I think we're going to start with Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Carlson, welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, Senators, thank you. My name is Bo Carlson. I'm the Associate Superintendent for Park and Trail Operations for Three Rivers Park District. We're a regional park agency. We serve suburban Hennepin County, so all of the cities and communities outside of the city of Minneapolis. I want to talk a little bit just based on the testimony of our previous testifiers and then talk a little bit about the regional system, the metro regional system, and where we fit in. I think there are some key statements that were made in the presentation, and it was trying to understand that this was really a framework or the start of a framework of recommendations to begin to look at how we allocate the Park and Trail Fund. And it is the recognition, and the committee recognizes that themselves, that there isn't all the data there that we can really make a good apples-to-apples comparison. And as I think the committee knows and we're starting to realize, these are two very different systems and two very different geographical regions if you're just simply looking at the metro and greater Minnesota. Now break that down even further amongst all the different regions of the state of Minnesota, and it even gets more complicated as we look at all these elements. So it certainly is a challenge, and we appreciate the hard work that went into the work group and trying to come up with good recommendations and solid recommendations. That having been said, we also recognize the fact that we don't have that consistent pattern of what constitutes regional allocations, what constitutes those measurement tools that we can make and make recommendations to the legislature on how you should make recommendations ultimately and how those dollars are allocated. So with that, we wanted to offer maybe some just kind of core elements or core components of what we as the regional system constitute and why we think we bring some value to the table and why there may be some opportunity to tweak what some of those recommendations are when we look at those varying measures, and we can bring forward maybe a higher number than what's being recommended by the committee. At the same time, I do want to say that there has been a lot of history here. There has been a lot of debate between the Greater Minnesota Regional Park System and the Metro Regional Park System. I think we've kind of reached an understanding between the two agencies of the relationship that both of us serve, not only in what those recommended percentages ultimately should be, but how we can ultimately collaborate across boundaries, which is one of the core elements that was defined within the study group as they brought forward. As Mr. Steffrud stated, the Metropolitan Regional System is governed by the Met Council. It consists of 10 implementing agencies throughout the metropolitan area. It constitutes both county regional park systems, regional park systems such as ourselves, city park agencies such as Minneapolis and St. Paul throughout the area. We're based on a solid criteria. We're based on a criteria that's defined and adopted by the Metropolitan Council. It's guided in all of our systems. It's master planned to in all of our systems that we identify what those areas are. And it's really some core things. It's visitation, both in number and visitor origin, recognizing that people often cross boundaries to get to where those park facilities are, and recreate in areas that aren't always in our backyards, but within that distance of willingness to travel to ultimately recreate. Acreage, that's kind of a core element. We're not talking about the small neighborhood park. We're not talking about the ball fields down the corner. These are large tracts of natural resource-based land that often are preserving as much as protecting the resource within our area and providing that natural resource-based recreational opportunity. And if you go back and you look at the passage of the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment, it really stated that the dollars from this fund were intended to be for the support of parks and trails in regional or statewide significance. And that's somewhat ominous and somewhat out there in the sense that how do we define that? How do we really look at what regional is, and how do we define ultimately how we go forward with those recommendations? And again, as I stated, this isn't about the ball fields. This isn't about the local parks. It's really about those larger tracts of land that are beyond the boundaries of one particular jurisdiction or one particular governmental unit, that they have the ability to ultimately support that and what they're using. So that criteria then also can become the way that we then define how we're going to proportionally distribute the money to the various agencies that are out there. In 2009, the legislature directed the DNR to develop a 25-year long-range strategy that would go into making recommendations on how those dollars should be distributed amongst the agencies. And they really landed on kind of four pillars or four strategies as we go forward. Those pillars were, first, connecting people to the outdoors. And when you look at the population, 53% of the state's population is in the seven-county metro area. The work group recognized that most of the recreation is within that 30-minute area, that people often recreate in those places that they can get to after work or on the weekend when they have a couple hours and they want to go for a hike or a bike ride, those types of things. So that core of providing recreational opportunities within 50% of the population base really focuses on the metro regional system. And I think we have the proven track record to show that. We've got over 43 million visits to our metropolitan regional system. And that really shows that we're being used, we're being loved by those population groups or that population center here in the seven county metro. The second piece was acquiring land and creating opportunities. Of the metro regional parks allocation, we put 10% into an acquisition fund. And we really identify those areas on our collar counties or emerging communities and the outlying areas where we need to identify new tracts of land that we can secure as park property for the long-term needs of the metropolitan region. Thirdly, it talks about taking care of what we have. In the regional system that we operate in, we have parks that are almost 100 years old or more than that. And these are parks that are icons of the state of Minnesota. We're talking about Chain of Lakes, Como Zoo, Minnehaha Falls, systems and parks that are well-loved and well-known amongst all of us in the state of Minnesota. Those parks are being loved to death. The traffic that we get at those facilities, we need to make investments back into those infrastructure pieces to make sure that we have those legacy parks within our system for future generations. And by continuing to make those investments back into those parks, we can provide and preserve those opportunities within the system. That is one element that was lacking in the working group's recommendation, that we do have a destination system in the regional system. We got no credit within that 20% that was designated for destination recreation in the metro area. And when we talk about areas like, again, the Como Zoo and Chain of Lakes, all of us have family from Greater Minnesota that come to our facilities to recreate and to see the falls or see the zoo and some of those other areas. Finally, coordination among the partners. We coordinate within our system to identify and make sure that we have connectivity, and secondarily to make sure that we're not duplicating recreational services that we're providing in our area. We're not creating a regional park and then across the street having the same regional park in a different jurisdiction. That's part of our regional planning effort. That's what goes into our work with the Metropolitan Council. We really feel that we're meeting the intent of the voter in the passing of the legacy amendment in the first place, and then secondarily, taking steps towards achieving the goals the legislature adopted in achieving the long-range plan. We feel continued investment in that, continued investment in the Metro Regional Park System goes a long way in securing that these investments are wise and investments are done well in preserving what the intent of the voter was with the legacy amendment. With that, I'll turn it over to Senator Roebling to talk a little bit more about the regional system.
Thank you, Ms. Carlin. Senator Roebling, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Claire Roebling. I'm the Communications and Legislative Coordinator for Scott County.
Couldn't stay away, huh?
Pardon?
Couldn't stay away, huh?
Couldn't stay away. Come up here every now and then on issues that are important to our area. But, and this is one of them, certainly. You know, we are within the metropolitan area, but as Senator Osmick said, it's always kind of on the fringe. At one time, I even represented non-metro counties as well as part of Scott County, and then the redistricting brought me into just Scott County at that time. So, but I realized that we weren't that different. We have a lot of commonality, and people do travel to places where they can find great recreational opportunities, and we're all looking for those in our communities. And some people have been asking me, for example, what have I been doing since I left the Senate and haven't been working full time? And I said, well, one of the things I do is I pick up my little granddaughter, who's almost three, and I take her to a metro regional park every other week, and she is learning about deer and raccoon. She puts her little backpack on, and she says she's going to school, and she's learning about animals and nature, and it's a wonderful opportunity. There's other parents and grandparents coming from all over the area to these programs at the Three Rivers Parks. And one of the things...
You're not teaching her to skip school, are you?
She thinks she's going to school. She can't wait to go to school. She loves it. And, you know, we really have some unique opportunities in the metro area to connect people with nature. And we have to expand those and really advertise them and promote them because it is so critical to what we value in Minnesota. And I think taking these little kids, and I see lots of them there, and exposing them to the various wildlife, and even there's one park that's called Gale Woods Farms, and we've been there several times. And last time we were there, she held a brand new lamb in her lap. And, you know, I live on a farm, so she could have some opportunities. We don't raise lambs to have exposure to farm life, but most of these children have no relatives or any place they can go to see farm life anymore. And I think this helps all of Minnesota to make sure that the metropolitan kids are getting exposed to these opportunities as well. It's really important. And having other opportunities, for example, my son grew up hunting in the metro parks. And I know Senator Ingebrigtsen talked about hunting opportunities. My family never got into going up north. They weren't quite sure where to go. It wasn't part of their family heritage and tradition to head out state further. And so when they started having lotteries where you could get your name in to possibly hunt in one of the metro parks, they applied and have been very often successful either for the shotgun hunt or a bow hunt. And in fact, my son and my nephews and nieces all grew up learning to hunt in those metro parks. And we're still doing that. Right now, on Saturday, if any of you are available, in Scott County, we are having a special hunt for disabled veterans in one of our regional parks. And they're perfect. A lot of these veterans are from the metro area. We can take them out on as far as we possibly can on roads and pathways, because many of them are wheelchair bound, and they have an opportunity to shoot a turkey. And it's a huge thrill for them. They've also done it with youth. They also have some other adult hunts as well. but some really unique opportunities and things that I think many of us who have this tradition in our family want to make sure as many people in the state as possible are exposed to, lest we have turn into an anti-hunting majority. And so I think that, you know, having these opportunities in Metro Parks, and I guess I'm just here to emphasize the importance of Metro Parks and what they mean. And, you know, I was talking to my daughter, too. She had taken her family to the Minnesota Zoo, and she said, gosh, Mom, it's kind of expensive to go there. You know, it was $18 for an adult, and if Julia had been three, she's just under three, she would have been like $12. So, and then they have a baby. And so, you know, around $50 or more to go to the Minnesota Zoo. But they can go to the Como Park Zoo, which is one of our metro regional parks, and they can go for free. And my mom was listening to this discussion. She said, you know, when we were kids, we were really poor, and we didn't ever take vacations anywhere. But every summer, we borrowed one of the relatives' cars. They didn't even have their own car. And we drove to Como Park Zoo, and we enjoyed the day at the zoo and had a picnic there. And so that is a destination point for many people in our state, and probably many of you from greater Minnesota may have gone up there to the zoo, too. And yet, when they considered destination sites in this new formula, they didn't give the metro area any of that funding. And we have a lot of people coming here. As Mr. Carlson said, we have Minnehaha Falls. We have the chain of lakes, where they estimate that they had 5.1 million visitors last year, and Como Park had over 4 million visitors. So obviously these are points of destination. They're not all coming from right around their immediate area. And so as you consider this, as you think about what is happening and how these funds are distributed, I just really want you to consider how important it is to engage the metro population in these activities, and this is where they are. A lot of them can't afford to go to Greater Minnesota, and you have wonderful resources in Greater Minnesota. I wish everybody could get out there and get to the state parks more and some of the even the regional parks that the counties out there have. But it isn't always practical or reasonable, and so we really value our metro parks and hope you give us your greatest consideration. Of course, you know, we were receiving 43 and 42% of the allocation previously, and we'd like to get something like that again. If not there, though, you know, I can argue why we should get habitat funding for some of our regional parks as well, which could come from Lasard Sams. We were disappointed that the package that was submitted this year wasn't considered. And I think that with the hunts and things that we have going on out in the, you know, the rural Hennepin, rural Scott, rural Carver, in those regional parks out there, we certainly should be eligible for that as well. So however you do it, we just need to keep these activities going and growing. So thank you.
Senator Osmond.
Just to sort of amplify on what Senator Romling said, she brought up Gale Woods Farm. That's in my district. It is not only do they have
the metro park or the rural park?
That's a metro park. They actually coordinate with the schools, and my daughter actually takes part in many different school activities that go on inside of that particular metro park. And then very close to that is Lake Minnetonka Regional Park, which has, I think, would probably qualify for some Lasard Sam's money for certain activities. But they're a destination point not only for people who go to the swing. Strangely enough, it's next to the lake. It's named Lake Minnetonka. It actually isn't. It doesn't have a beach on the lake, but it has a large swimming beach area that is man-made. But it draws an incredible number of people as a destination, plus a big play area, plus boating options that they have to drop a boat into the water. So I think the metros versus the non-metros here, the metros, we're not asking for the whole pie, but we would like some more consideration on that destination component, because we really are a destination for the people from Minneapolis going out to Lake Minnetonka, and the people from Lake Minnetonka going to Como Park. They're certainly inter-metro destination points that we use very frequently that I think should be taken into consideration.
Senator Dietzel, you're next, but we got about 10 minutes. Is there anybody else that wants to testify that's in the room here? So in case just so I don't miss anybody. Okay, Senator Dietzel, go ahead.
Thanks, I
don't know if does anybody have any questions of these two witnesses?
I have questioned.
Let's get Senator Herbo first then.
Ms. Nelson, when you said change of lakes, is that Lake Calhoun or is it Phelan Lake where my district is?
It's many.
Mr. Carlson, is that what you wanted? Or did you talk about
I'm sorry, Senator Mr. Chair. I didn't quite catch that. Could you repeat the question, please?
When you refer to the change of lake, is that Lake Calhoun or Phelan Lake where my district is? Because we also refer, in my district, we also said Phelan Change of Lakes, which is connected to Coleman Lakes and Keller Lakes, and it's a regional park.
Yeah, certainly. I apologize. It could be either chain of lakes. In this example, I was talking about the Minneapolis side, but certainly the Phelan side also is a destination.
And I thought he was talking about the Sturgeon Lake chains up in
the whitefish.
So I just want to say that it's heavily used too in my district.
Senator Dietzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to both the testifiers and former Senator Roebling. I think she hit on a good point that you have. There is hunting and fishing in the outer suburbs, and there is a lot of habitat here, and there are destination spots. And she talked about growing up poor and not having opportunities to go up north. And I, Senator Ingebrigtsen, heard this last year because I said this ad nauseum, where I represent a large immigrant population that doesn't have money, and then we also have immigrants, second-gen immigrants that, you know, we didn't grow up going up north, or if we did, it was a once in the summer or once every summer thing. But if we want to help, you know, grow this Minnesota culture and continue to expand that culture and expand these opportunities for other kids so that when they grow up, they take their families up north or down south or wherever on the chain of lakes, you know, throughout the state, we need to give them opportunities. And a lot of the families I represent do not have the money to go up north. And actually going, Augsburg College partnered with some of the Somali organizations and took a group of Somali kids. And it was a huge thing. And they just went out to Lake Rebecca, which is in western Hennepin County, part of the Three Rivers. And that was an overnight event. And they went canoeing, and it was great. And that was a destination event. It's part of the Elm Creek. I believe it's part of Elm Creek or somewhere out there. But, I mean, we do have destination spots, and we do have a need. And again, it helps everybody because it helps get these kids involved in outdoors. A lot of the kids in my district, they don't have the opportunity to see a baby lamb or any of that. They are, you know, purely inner city kids. And so if we can get them out and get them to even to any of the parks in Minneapolis or the regional parks in the greater metro area, I think is a big thing. So I would just like to thank them for coming here and echo everybody and saying that I think we would just like our fair share and appreciate consideration.
Members, we're going to argue about this probably till the end of the session. And I don't know who's going to win or who's going to lose or if we're all going to come out even. But we did put it in law to get a study done. And the results that came back are what was presented to us today. And I know oftentimes people don't agree with the results of studies, but it was the legislature that instructed people to do this. And this is what ended up coming back. Whether or not it's fair or not fair, I don't know. But I guess we'll see what happens when we go into the legacy subcommittee. So
can we vote whether we think it's fair or unfair for a?
You can go ahead and say whatever you want. So
well, it's 4-4 right now.
Does it? Wait, no, Senator Westrom, you wanted to say something, right?
Mr. Chair, I'm kind of new to this debate in the sense that I haven't sat on an environment committee. I've heard about this tangentially, you know, as it comes before the bodies before, but I guess a question to the witnesses, but first to you, Mr. Chair, I just want to clarify.
No witnesses, so you just have to make a statement.
Well, they can come back up, but Mr. Chair, this is just informational. Are we taking amendment votes or bill votes today?
We're going to adjourn in about 2 minutes. This is all going to end up in the Senator Cohen Subcommittee on Legacy. So,
sure. Okay. So, well, Mr. Chair, and I guess just for the listening audience, and if they want to react to this, my question is where are they proposing to take their 2 or 3% back out? And I just fundamentally,
it would either
think,
be from the rural or from the DNR, one or the other.
Well, I know, but that's what I'd like to know. Where do they propose it comes from that would quote unquote be fair? When you're already at 40%, you've got seven counties and you've got 80 remaining counties in the state getting 20%, and I just the numbers just don't bear out as fair. That, I mean, frankly, it should be a third, a third, a third. I would contend, but where would they like to take it out of? I guess that's
Mr.
what
Carlson,
I.
Carlson, you don't even have to comment on this. That was really a good comment to end on here. Okay. Thank you all very much.
Yeah, that made my eyes. I was thinking 33, Mr. Chair.